walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Melanie Sue Bowles, founder and director of Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary, now approaching its 25th anniversary. Over the years, she's been a guest multiple times on the show discussing horses, the sanctuary, books she's written, and other topics. Today, though, the conversation will focus on a recent Facebook post that Bowles wrote, lamenting the severe challenges of fundraising she's faced over a quarter century, making it clear that Proud Spirit will scale back its fundraising measures. There are still 47 horses to feed, and altogether halt its rescue and advocacy efforts. It struck me as a message heavy with resignation, and I thought discussing the post, and more importantly, the experiences behind it, could prove broadly illuminating, maybe offer an important cautionary tale or two. So I invited her back onto the program to discuss these issues, and we'll get to that conversation in short order when we speak with Melanie Sue Bowles in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also, later in the show, I'll speak briefly with Susanna Sherman, one of the organizers of the 10th Annual Thanks Vegan Feast, the huge potluck vegan dinner held on Thanksgiving Day at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tampa. If you haven't quite locked in plans for Thanksgiving, or you're looking to add some plans for tomorrow, you may want to hear what's in store for those attending Thanks Vegan. Also later in the program is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering a pair of tickets to see Billy Gibbons this Sunday at the Mahaffey Theater. Yes, Billy Gibbons as in ZZ Top's Billy Gibbons, Hall of Famer Billy Gibbons, the amazing guitarist Billy Gibbons, touring now behind his solo debut album. So we'll offer a pair of tickets for that later on in the program. Right now, though, let's get into the conversation with Melanie, which involves some significant issues and perhaps various points of view. Indeed, you're very welcome to participate in this discussion. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Melanie Sue Bowles back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. And longtime and incredibly dedicated listeners may recall that over the years you've been a guest on the show three times, including two full-length interviews and one shorter interview. But for those listening to you who may not have heard those conversations or otherwise might not be familiar with Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary, perhaps you can provide a brief overview of the sanctuary and the work you've done there for close to 25 years.
Well, we are one of the very few true sanctuaries in the United States. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rescue organizations, but very few. Once the horses come to us, they have a home for life, and that's pretty unique. We deal with every breed, you know, Mustangs, Thoroughbreds, Arabs, everything.
And when you say pretty unique within the realm of horse facilities?
Yeah, I mean, most organizations adopt the horses out once they're well. We don't do that. We've never done that. We are a true sanctuary.
And just for those listening who might wonder why, what is the reason behind not adopting them out once they are there?
I think there's a terrible disregard for the bonds that horses form. I think it's just a callous disregard. They form very, very strong bonds for their herd mates and their home and their familiar surroundings and their people. And we shuffle them around like they're inanimate playing pieces. And that was our intention, was to honor them as a family and honor the bonds they form.
Yeah. So again, it's for those who might not be that steeped in that world, it's not like dogs or cats where you say, hey, yeah, the great thing to do here would be to adopt them out. In this case, there's a lot of social and other implications to pulling a horse out of that setting.
And many of these horses have been through enough. You know, once they come here, we don't want to disrupt their lives anymore. And I firmly believe that horses have an intrinsic value beyond serving mankind. They don't need a job.
Okay, so a quarter of a century is a long time to do pretty much anything, really. And it's certainly a long time to look after dozens and dozens of horses over all those years. How would you describe the ebb and flow of passion you've felt for that kind of work at Proud Spirit over these nearly 25 years?
Well, I'm a very positive person. You don't survive 25 years doing rescue work unless you have some coping skills and, you know, the ability to find the good. And I do. I mean, I've never really gotten down. I've never felt overwhelmed or sad about our work here. I've always been very, very positive. It's always been very uplifting. And you know, I get so much from the horses. And I think people see my posts on Facebook, healthy horses eating great big piles of fluffy hay and well-maintained pastures and them drinking from a sparkling pond. And I swear weekly, so sometimes daily, people say to me, they'd give anything to have my life. But truthfully, that's like, I kind of liken it to spending a few hours at the coolest club in Miami, dancing and drinking with all the beautiful people, but leaving before the lights come on at 2 a.m., you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the sense that as much as it might appear a certain way, especially when you're looking at a photo or a Facebook post or whatever, but the commitment is actually pretty sweeping. And when you run a sanctuary like this, time off is very hard to come by. Vacations are virtually unheard of, but burnout is not unheard of. To what extent would you say, even though you're a positive person and always had that enthusiasm, to what extent has there been either a diminished passion or maybe a cumulative kind of fatigue that may have set in over a quarter of a century?
Well, I think the tipping point probably happened a few years ago. I was called in to investigate the allegations of abuse and neglect at a large thoroughbred breeding training facility. Over 100 horses, and I arrived to find horrific abuse, unconscionable neglect, and it just, I'll spare you the details, but I built my case over about a one-month period and dozens of photographs, statements from past and present employees, documentation of the horses who had died during the investigation, before the investigation, and I even got a statement from the abusive owner's brother who said that his brother, the owner of the farm, was mentally ill and violent, and he should not have animals. I took all of this to the local law enforcement, and a sheriff, several deputies, and a DA followed up the investigation, but ultimately they refused to act. And I was just, I was crushed. I was horrified, but I wasn't going to give up. And I actually ended up calling ARM, and I spoke with Richard Kudo. We had a lengthy phone conversation, and I sent him some evidence, and he was appalled, and he agreed to take the case. But a few months went by, and I didn't hear back from Kudo, and I recontacted him. And while we were talking, he apologized, and he told me that he couldn't take my case because he was just moving into the trenches of that Loxahatchee nightmare. And I was beyond heartsick for these 100-plus horses living in this hell. But I understood Richard completely. I understood his decision. But the crux of all of this was, I recall, after Richard and I hung up, I recall thinking to myself, what is wrong with us? As guardians of this one and only earth, what is wrong with us that 100 suffering horses are put on the back burner because something bigger, something even more heinous is brewing?
Yeah.
And it was just soul crushing to me. And I some of the things that, you know, I've written for quite a few magazines, feature articles, and of course my books. But I'm writing today about the exact same things I wrote about 20 years ago. And you just shake your head and you just, you know, I don't know.
Sounds like there has been a cumulative thing, and then there have been some pivotal moments like the one you just described. Unfortunately, there aren't enough Richard Kudos and or ARMs to deal with anywhere near even a fraction of all these issues. So, yeah, I could see how that would be very wearing and exhausting on a spiritual, emotional level, much less a physical one. So I'm just trying to get a sense of kind of the general backdrop for the Facebook post before we get into that. And it seems like in a way that's kind of what we've created here. It just sounds like the work remains important. You remain passionate about it, but it's a tough slog generally, and then there's moments like the case that you investigated that had 100 horses at stake that no one really could help with properly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let me let folks know, if you're just tuning in, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Melanie Sue Bowles, founder and director of Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary, which she's operated for nearly 25 years and recently announced some significant changes in how the sanctuary will function. If you'd like to ask Melanie a question or offer a comment or offer your own input about fundraising, rescue, advocacy, those are all sort of the key issues of today's conversation. Sure, horses might be part of it now and again, but it's sort of the things that surround the Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary that we'll probably be exploring more deeply today. So, okay, so let's delve into the Facebook post. Set the scene a bit, if you would. This post went up November 12th, 2 weeks ago, tomorrow. How are things going then? What was your mindset?
Well, I feel like the equestrian community as a whole is failing. We aren't taking care of the lives that are already here. I just feel like we are failing our horses. And it's
and is that
again, just kind of what I said a minute ago. I'm saying the same things I said 20 years ago, and nothing's changing. And I think it's very popular for people who love horses to vilify the big industries like the lettered associations for their irresponsible breeding, the BLM for, you know, the illegal roundups, the racing industry, the Tennessee walking horse industry, Big Lick. And they are all villains. They are. These people are correct. We are right to vilify these people, these big industries. But the very same people holding the big guys to the fire are the very same people that send us emails, sometimes daily. It's exhausting, inundated with requests for people asking us to take in their unrideable horses so they can move on to the next best thing. There is a horrible lack of commitment to unrideable an elderly horse. And it's astonishing to me. It truly is. It's infuriating, it's disheartening, and it's an enormous problem. So while everybody's making a big deal about the high-profile situations, they aren't taking care of what's in their own backyard.
And it just sounds like the numbers, Melanie, from what you're describing, are just so staggering that for people who, for just a moment at least, are not looking at the big headline-grabbing stories, but just would look at any random area that you're describing, the numbers probably are just so overwhelming. And that's, I guess, part of why, as you've known a couple of times, you're saying the same thing you were saying 20 years ago, because things aren't really changing. If anything, there's probably, I don't know, percentage-wise, at least as many instances of this, or, you know, horses that are being neglected, and people who are, or people who just say, well, this horse isn't what it used to be. Can you take him off my hands?
Exactly. And you need to make, before you even get a horse, you need to decide what you're going to do with a 1,000-pound animal when he's no longer rideable. The rescue organization simply cannot handle this all. And, I've had people ask us, come right out and admit, you know, they got a horse because they want to ride. This horse they can't ride, and they can't afford to, they can't afford to have a horse they can't ride. And it's just, did you think he was never going to, was he always going to be rideable?
Yeah.
Think about this.
Well, clearly people don't, right? I mean, that's just it. It's sort of that, you'd hate to think of horses as anything like an impulse buy. But obviously for a lot of people, it's like that's what's right out in front of them at that moment. And what the bigger picture holds and how that horse may fare some years down the road is not at all part of the decision-making process.
Exactly. And, you know, there's two aspects of advocacy. Well, there's numerous aspects, but one is things like working with law enforcement, spending all day in my truck driving to reports of an emaciated horse, finding the owner, dealing with them in a non-confrontational way, determining the reason they're not feeding the horse. They don't care because, quote-unquote, it's just a horse, or they've fallen on hard times, or they're mentally ill and they can't see the problem. Then you have to work on finding a solution. So it's either, again, it's bringing in law enforcement, it's either helping someone who has fallen on hard times, taking them hay, which we've done many times out of our own supply, to get someone over a rough spot. We've even paid for veterinary calls to other people who want to do the right thing, but they just, they're in a bad space, a place, and we've helped them get over it. And then there's that's a whole set of stress and work dealing with emaciated reports of an emaciated horse. But then there's the second aspect of advocacy, which is actually more exhausting, and that's dealing with the endless requests of people asking us to take their unrideable elderly horse. That is actually more exhausting.
Well, yeah, that just sounds not only exhausting, but as part of that sort of soul killing, right?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, it's just
yeah.
All right.
So here's, this is where I am now.
Yeah.
so here at the sanctuary, there's the physical work of taking care of the horses and everything that entails, maintaining their environment, keeping it clean, managing manure, hefting 30 bales of hay every day,
and we're
cleaning water troughs.
And we're talking about 47 horses at the moment,
yeah,
right?
You know, this is every day. It's all day, every day.
Yeah.
And it doesn't address the emotional toll. You know, we make end-of-life decisions. We tend to illnesses and injuries. And then we have to add in trying to raise funds, the monumental task of fundraising. Then you add in the advocacy. So there's all the work here, all the monumental work of trying to raise funds to keep this nonprofit organization going, and then all the advocacy. So something's got to go. I'm 58 years old. I'm still fit and healthy. Knock on wood. Thank you very much. I'm grateful, big time grateful. But that's not going to last. I'm getting older, and so something's got to give. And the horses aren't going anywhere. The work to take care of them isn't going anywhere. The need for funding isn't going anywhere. And I've still got to concentrate on all of that. But as I said, something's got to go. What does that leave? That leaves advocacy, and that's why I'm stepping away from it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend all day. I'm stepping away from advocacy.
So,
and
yes.
Our 20th wedding anniversary, I was on the road driving to the Guadalupe Mountains in West Texas to bring two horses back. That's how I spent our 20th wedding anniversary.
Oh, you romantic W, Melanie.
I know.
But let's really get even a bit more with what we've heard now, specifics of the post. Because basically the post was sort of an extended musing, really, about some of the things we've already covered. Just the tremendous and ongoing challenges of fundraising. And interestingly, that when Facebook came along, sort of it seemed like it might be a bit of a godsend. And as you know, sort of the reverse is true, that I guess in part because so many people are besieged with requests, well, everywhere, but including on Facebook, that it's actually sort of worked against increased donations to Proud Spirit, as you might have once hoped. And just talking about some specific examples, a particular post where you were just seeking some support for in a specific moment for a specific thing, and sort of ran through the statistics of how often it was liked, how often it was shared, how often it was viewed, and that yielded, as I recall, I think one contribution for $40, and that I think by your calculations, 8,000 people had seen that post. So, it just seemed like, there was just a lot of frustration, a lot of exhaustion, and it was to me, it seemed like a lot of sadness, too, was in that post, and you really made it clear that you were scaling back the fundraising measures, although, again, you still had those 47 horse mouths to feed, but you were halting the rescue and advocacy efforts. So I guess one thing is, when you sat down to write that post, had you experienced a last straw moment?
I think that post that I brought up, that one incident where I actually came out and asked for help, and nothing, it was kind of, I threw my hands up in the air and just said, I give up.
Mm-hmm.
But Facebook has, I've never been good at fundraising. I'm not that good at it, but we've always survived quite well. I mean, I used to have a newsletter. I used to do talk at VFWs and so forth and so on. And
yeah.
And people have always come through for us. We've got an exemplary reputation, and people have always come through for us. And a lot of it's come out of our own pocket. My husband and I earned our living as firefighters, professional firefighters in Sarasota. And, we've dedicated, a lot of our own money to this. And we've always managed. I've never freaked out about anything. I've never been. And I think shortly after, but it's getting worse. It's getting harder and harder and harder, more difficult. And we had a shipment of hay coming in, which is $4,800, and that lasts less than a month. And we didn't have the funding for it. And I think that's what made me, I think that was when I just really threw up my hands.
That spooked you, it sounds like.
It scared me.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we were going to tap into our bank account again. But that was a lot of money, and it scared me. Ultimately, the contributions came in, and mostly from old contributors who know us well. Excuse me, I've got a little frog in my throat. But I wrote a check for $4,800, and we had, in the Proud Spirit bank account, we had $4,862, and I wrote a check for $4,800.
Yeah.
you know, and it's, yeah, it's scary.
And so, Melanie, what, like, at that point, and with some of the things just kind of over time that we've already talked about a little bit, what do you attribute to what I can only assume is at least some diminished contributions over time? I mean, meanwhile, as we've talked about, there's more and more numbers of horses that need help, including from you and others. So what accounts for that, do you think?
Well, I'm not positive. I can't really say, but I do think that Facebook has made it worse. I really do. We're inundated with charities asking for help. I think that just Facebook has made it worse.
So are there things that, as you started to realize that you did effectively almost sort of counter the Facebook factor? I mean, are there new measures that you've tried to help offset the slide that you point to Facebook for?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I decided that we are not going to take any more horses. We're not going to continue to add to the herd. I think it's an irresponsible thing to do. As far as different techniques of raising funds, and I don't know, I may go back to some of the old ways I used to do things, newsletters, simply through email, giving more talks and that kind of thing.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It seems like you were part of what I thought was notable about the post. Well, there were a number of things, but it just seemed like you were, again, it wasn't panicky, but it just seemed like you were at wit's end. Again, it seemed more sad and reflective than like, oh my God, but it seemed like you really didn't have solutions about how to proceed other than to step away from rescue work, which you said in the post you were going to do, and step away from advocacy, which you said you were going to do, which, again, as you've already explained, there's a context for that, and it makes tremendous sense, but it's still, well, I think even my comment to your post on that day, I said this is sort of understandable and depressing in equal measure, because the work that you've done has been obviously so important and valuable for so many horses, obviously related to that in many cases, so many humans, but you have reached a point where it's like, hey, I can't do it. I just can't, and we don't have the funds to do it. It's not just that I'm tired or burnt out or frustrated. I literally don't have the dough to do it.
That's that is truly it. I'm not burnt out. I'm not burnt out dealing with the horses. I'm not burnt out with the workload. I'm burnt out dealing with people, and I'm burnt out with fundraising.
Well, so how do you, other than sort of bringing back some older school methods like the newsletter, I mean, how do you deal with that? Because you're not going to take on any new horses, and you're otherwise not going to be engaged in the advocacy work that you used to do, it sounds like. But there's still 47 horses there every day, and there's probably going to be another hay bill in less than a month that hopefully you will be able to cover. But, I mean, how so? What are some steps that you might be able to take? Or if people, in response to that post or otherwise, offered, hopefully, donations, but have they all also offered suggestions?
Yeah, we get a lot of suggestions. well, again, the problem is also the amount of time you have to dedicate to fundraising. I just don't have it because it's just Jim and I taking care of the horses. I don't have, you know, I have one friend who I network with who's very successful at fundraising, and she devotes 6 hours, sometimes more, to simply fundraising. I don't have that luxury. And she does this every single day.
6 hours a day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And does she run a horse or other kind of facility? Or
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I network with dozens and dozens of other organizations, but they've all got staff. They've all got, it's just all-consuming.
Yeah.
I just don't have that luxury.
There must be people that, over all these years, that are fans and supporters on some level or another. Are there people there that may be able to, from wherever they live, whether it's nearby or anywhere really, help you with the fundraising efforts, take some of that off your plate?
We don't have anyone right now. I would welcome, you know, someone who wanted to simply take on some of that burden.
Have you always done it strictly by yourself over all these years?
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what about grants? What are the possibilities for grants for Proud Spirit?
We've gotten a few over the years. They're hard to get, and it requires a lot of paperwork and a lot of, they're very, very, very difficult to get. But we've secured a few over the years.
It sounds like, again, it's just tough, slim pickings and tough to do. And again, it's sort of a little balance sheet of the time and effort to pursue something like that, which you may or may not get. It's not like, hey, if I put all the time in on this application, we're going to get X amount of dollars. You may or may not, relative to the day-to-day requirements of running a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'd be curious. I mean, I saw the actual comments on that post, and there were quite a few, and I think there was 50-some-odd shares. Also, let me ask you, too, when you started writing that post, did you end up writing what you had set out to write, or were you a little surprised by the post by the time you finished?
That's a great question. Yeah, I think that it actually truthfully and candidly, it calmed down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I when I first started out, I was a little more wound up, and I kind of settled myself down and reworded a couple things.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, it might be counterintuitive. Those of us who's written for a living recognize that you can start writing and end up a bit surprised by what ends up on the page or the post in this case, especially if you sit down at the keyboard feeling emotional initially, you know, one way or another, just like you can look up at what you've finished and you're ready to print or send or do whatever you're going to do, post, and it's like, wow, I didn't know I'd end up there. And I just felt like that might be one of those instances. So
yeah, a little bit. And also, conversely, it was a bit of a relief also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been something that has been on my mind for quite a while. A short time ago, we got a telephone call from a woman her husband had been taking in horses for about 12 years, but they were in their late 70s, and her husband had just had a stroke. She asked me if we could take all her horses. I said, no, but I'll help you place them. I can't bring them here. This was just a short time ago, and she was very upset. She was crying and very distraught about what was going to happen to the remaining herd. And when I got off the phone with her, I just recall thinking, I don't want to end up like that. I don't want to be her. As I said, I'm 58 now, but, you know, we don't know what tomorrow brings.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be the person calling someone else, in a panic about what I'm going to do with this herd. And so that's the responsible thing to do.
Yeah.
Is to step away when you've given enough. And, you know, I'm very proud of our history. I'm proud of our reputation. I'm proud of what we've done.
You're tapped out. I mean, it's time. Yeah. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Melanie Sue Bowles, founder and director of Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary. We're discussing some significant changes she announced recently in a Facebook post as the sanctuary approaches its 25th anniversary. I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. You know, one thing, too, about the fact that you are right on the cusp of the 25th year, I mean, one of the things that I felt like was so significant about this post and about what you were saying in it was that this was not a panicky newcomer that had gone in over her head, saying, hey, I'm going to start a sanctuary, but 25-year veteran saying what you were saying. And I just thought, this is part of the reason I thought this was so important to discuss this. And I just see an email popping up right now. I don't even know what's in it, but I just see on the subject line, this is a crucial interview for people who want to start a sanctuary. And boy, is it, because the challenges are just profound. And I've just talked to so many people over so many years, all kinds of sanctuaries. And, you know, people always get in it with great intentions and they have gigantic hearts. But man, it's a grind, and some people are sort of caught off guard by how relentless it is, how they can't get away, how they can't get a break, how there's a lot of food bills and other bills and vet bills and stuff that intuitively, of course, they knew, but until the reality really hit, it's like, oh my God, what have I...
Well, this is a very big problem, and I get... I know so many people who have started large animal rescue horses, and they don't even last 2 years. I know numerous people who have, and unfortunately, a lot of people have told me that my books have influenced them to start a sanctuary or a rescue organization. And they call me for advice, and I always tell them, this is a serious commitment. Think long and hard about this. Jim and I haven't been on vacation together in over 15 years.
Yeah.
We don't go out to dinner. It's very rare that we go out to dinner. Going out to dinner is such a huge treat, I can't even tell you.
I'm sure. Yeah.
You've got to cancel plans with friends and family. And I'm just dumbfounded by how many people start this up and 2, 3, 6 years later, they're done, and they're asking us to help bail them out.
Well, that's the thing, and that's part of also why I felt this is so important is that, again, whether it's the horse world or any other world where someone starts a sanctuary, again, obviously, of course, with the greatest intentions and, you know, animal lovers and big kind souls and stuff. But yeah, when they don't, when they haven't really thought through what they're facing and the challenges that are going to be just monumental and growing often, and then they say, you know what, I can't take it, I can't take it, then those animals that are there when they say, I can't take it, I can't take it, you got a whole new problem for
exactly.
other people that are running whatever kind of sanctuary that they are that are going to get that call or that email, say, hey, we got to go, we're about to lose our minds, and can you take 27 or 127 mm-hmm. or whatever animals? It's like, oh my God. So it just spirals out of control, which again, there's just so many things that I thought were important about this. And just as I kind of said in a couple of different posts of my own, just sort of multiple kind of cautionary tales. So let's get a couple more emails. Actually, that email, by the way, that the subject line says, this is a crucial interview for people who want to start a sanctuary. Inside it says, help existing sanctuaries. They need your work with donations and your physical help. Obviously, if you're, you know, any kind of proximity to a sanctuary, whether it's a Proud Spirit or anyone else, get in touch. Say, hey, I don't have...
I say that all the time when people say to me, I would give anything to have your life, or I wish I could do what you do. And I say, well, you kind of can. You sort of can. Help us. Help
yeah.
us keep doing
Yeah, come
what
by
we're
for
doing.
A weekend. Yeah, or
yeah,
just for a Saturday even. Yeah.
Become part of our family and help us. Help us raise funds.
Yeah.
You know, help me sell more books. The book sales help me. You know, there's ways you can kind of live this life.
Right.
Help.
Right. Well, with that in mind, let's mention that the website is horsesofproudspirit.org. So you can find out all about the Sanctuary Beyond what you've heard maybe today for the first time. You can also find out about Melanie's books. There's three books, I think, and counting, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And so you can get one or more of those, which, full disclosure, I wrote a blurb for one of those three. But as Melanie points out, buying those books is yet another way to help support their efforts at the sanctuary. So let's take a call and maybe work some of our other emailers in there. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Melanie Sue Bowles.
Hi. First of all, I have to say, Melanie Sue, you have my greatest respect. I can't even conceive of, you know, the work to take care of 47 horses properly.
Thank you.
Yeah, just that. So, but what popped into my head was that, well, wait a minute. In a sense, it's almost like a single parent situation in that, you know, there's yourself and your husband, but compared to 47 horses, it's a very small parental unit. And when we say that it, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, I was sitting here thinking, well, that's what she needs. She needs a village. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm not giving you advice because I have no expertise, whatever. It's just what popped into my head.
No, I appreciate that. And just hearing that the work we do is valid is very uplifting.
Thanks for your call.
I mean, yeah.
Thank you very much. Another of our emailers says December 2nd is a give day, quote unquote. Perhaps you could try to get funds that way. Now, I'm sure, Melanie, I'm going to guess at least over all these years that you probably tried a number of measures but are probably open to suggestions for still others. But I'm guessing not too many stones have been unturned as you've tried to raise money to feed and
we're on the Amazon Smiles program. We're in, you know, all of that kind of stuff is all on our website, the things we're involved in. And yeah,
so here's an interesting suggestion from one of our other emailers. Why doesn't your client, I'm not sure, say to the people that called, asked her for her help, say, how much money do you have? Just give it to me. I'll be going out of business in 3 years, I think is what she says otherwise. But, you know, but I sort of know what she means. I mean, it seems, or he or whatever, a little drastic. But are there situations over the years where people said, hey, can you take my horse, or hey, horses? And you say, well, we really can't. But if you're willing to look after the cost of their care and feeding, you could certainly try to make some sort of accommodation for that.
Over the years, when we've had room, and depending on the situation, it depends on the individual situation, we have taken in horses an unrideable horse that someone just wanted to place with us with a contribution to the sanctuary.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
But at this point, as we know, where there's no more horses really under any circumstances.
No.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're just in the last moment or two, Melanie, but are there any important lessons that just even leading up to writing that post or even just sort of in whatever responses you've received? And by the way, the overall, did that post receive the kind of responses you expected generally or not so much, or what was your response to the responses you got?
It did. I mean, I was a very appreciative of the kind comments and the encouraging, just the kindness. I was very, very moved by that. And, I'll be candid and say I was hoping it would bring in a little more funding, but it really didn't.
Yeah.
It brought in some.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was no kapow, we're saved.
Right, yeah. Well, as you've said, I guess,
and
at least
that
from...
That just kind of enhanced my resolve.
You mean to stick with the decision that you had kind of pondered and basically announced in that post? It felt like, okay, I'm doing the right thing here, even though it might be heartbreaking to do. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, I think I told you in one of our conversations earlier. I mean, I cried. I've cried over this.
Yeah,
And I still get a little weepy now and then about it all. But
sure,
I think back over the years, but I'm you know, life is a journey, and I'm looking forward to, you know, more adventures and more journeys and more fulfilling more dreams, and I want to concentrate a little bit more on my writing. I'm working on.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a book in the works? I assume, or
I'm working on a couple novels, actually.
Oh, wow!
They have nothing to do with horses.
Okay,
and I'd like to write a final book about Proud Spirit.
Okay, wow! So that's gonna keep you at the computer there for some time to come. So that's good. So Melanie, all right. Well, thank you so much again. We've been speaking with Melanie Sue Bowles from Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary. Again, the website is horsesofproudspirit.org. Melanie, thanks for joining us again today on Talk Animals, and thanks for all your great work over 25 years for our horse friends, and you're obviously going to keep it going, just in a, you know, little different version. So
thank you so much, Duncan.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay.
In a few moments, we'll speak briefly with Susanna Sherman about tomorrow's Thanks Vegan Feast in Tampa, the 10th annual Thanks Vegan, no less. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. Wanted to spotlight Andy Ritchie today, and I'll touch on the reason why after we hear this bit. Here's Andy Ritchie with a piece called Balthazar in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
This is funny, though. Somebody in my neighborhood a couple weeks ago posted a sign on a telephone pole for a lost falcon. Like the bird. They're like, we lost our falcon, help us. I'm like, I can't. I'm not the Beastmaster. I can't summon wildlife from the skies. Like, if you lose your dog and you post a sign, like, yeah, there's a chance you get your dog back. But if you lose your falcon... it's gone, dude. Forever. Because it can fly and it hates you. It's not gonna be hanging out in the woods one day like, God damn it, I really miss that hood. Nobody puts a hood on me out here that makes me think I'm asleep. It sucks. It's like, these people are never gonna get their falcon back. I was like, well, maybe they'll get their falcon back. Because they're very smart. When they made the poster, they put a picture of the falcon on the poster. Yeah, which is very helpful if you're the one looking for it, right? Because that way you don't show up at their doorstep with the wrong falcon. I think we've all been there before. It's incredibly embarrassing. For all three parties involved, really. Falcon's just like, oh, this is not my house. I don't know why the falcon's Jewish in this joke, but... it's a Yiddish falcon. And then underneath the picture, they put the falcon's name. Balthazar. And there was a $300 reward for him, too. I guess they're really expensive. So I'm like, whatever. I got nothing better to do this afternoon. I start walking up and on my block like, Balthazar! Balthazar! People are giving me spare change. Poor kid's touched in the head.
That was Andy Ritchie with part of a piece called Balthazar, taken from his CD, King Dingaling. And he's a very bright, funny comic who's much beloved on the comedy scene. He's also, I'm afraid, gravely ill and just 37. Sometimes things just don't make sense. We love you, Andy. Let's move now into our brief chat with Susanna Sherman about tomorrow's Thanks Vegan Extravaganza. So indeed, let's welcome Susanna Sherman to Talking Animals. Good morning, Susanna.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. Why don't we start off by giving us a nickel tour, telling us really what exactly is Thanks Vegan?
Well, thank you. Yes, and as you said, it's the 10th annual Thanks Vegan. It's put on by Florida Voices for Animals, which is a local animal rights group here in Tampa. It's at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tampa on Morris Bridge Road in Tampa, Florida. And it's a wonderful feast. We have donations of different roasts and things that people can have that are vegan. And then also it's a potluck feast that just has rows and rows of different types of foods and desserts and all sorts of things. So it's a really nice way for people to show off their wonderful meals.
Let's go back a little bit. How many attendees did you have in the very first year, Susanna?
You know, I don't know. I attended the first year, but
okay.
I was not one of the organizers. Yeah, it was started by John Zacharias and Michelle LaFleur.
Mm-hmm.
And they said literally they put out a little a jar out front because they didn't have anybody to collect the money. And
yeah.
They, you know, didn't think they would have a whole lot. And from what I understand, I think it may have been over 100 for the very first year. So it was really a great thing to do, and so impressed that they stated on the very first one it was the first annual, so they
yeah,
knew this
I
was going to be a tradition.
I always like the optimism of anything that's the first annual.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, so how many are expected this year to attend?
It really varies every year. We're expecting maybe between 250 and 350.
Wow.
Yeah, so it depends, and depends on the weather and different things.
Sure.
So people can come. We have some people that come for part of the day and then still do things with other parts of their family for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And so it's a really nice event to be able to do things like that.
Sure. And how many dishes will be served at the spread?
Yeah, it's usually over 100 different dishes.
Oh, my
it's
goodness.
It's amazing. Yes. I always tell the story of, I think my mom came the third year, and she kept pulling on my sleeve saying, this is vegan, and this is vegan, and this is... So it's just such a variety, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have the normal mashed potatoes and pumpkin pies and things like that, but sometimes people will bring lasagna. I mean, it's really a nice mixture of different types of food, some raw food.
No, that's great, because, you know, I think for a lot of people who maybe aren't in the vegan realm might think, geez, well, how could you do Thanksgiving kind of without the turkey or whatever it might be? But also, I think a lot of people, they just take a moment and think, okay, if you remove the turkey, think of everything else that you typically have on a Thanksgiving meal, and it's pretty much among the probably 100 dishes that you'll find
exactly.
If you go to Thanks Vegan tomorrow. So
right, and we will have things like tofurkey and the field roast, so all the vegan meats also. So,
sure.
You know, it'll be a nice mixture for all sorts of different, like you said, people can get a bunch of different things.
Right.
So.
And the great
thing, I think
thing,
people are very shocked.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And I think the other thing, too, that's important is that it's not too late to get in on this. I mean, you know, again, if people haven't quite set their Thanksgiving plans or might have room for an additional set of plans, they still have the option to attend this, even though we're talking about tomorrow. So I think the website to find out more is thanksvegan.com, right,
correct.
Susanna? And,
yes.
And if people want to email to find out more specifically about what to bring or how it would cost or whatever beyond what they find on the website, they can email thanksvegan@gmail.com, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
You're right.
Yes, and
cool.
They can also go on the Facebook for Tampa Thanks Vegan Dinner.
Oh, great. Okay, so there's any number of ways to get more info and get in on this if you're inclined. So, great. Well, thanks, Susanna, for joining us today on Talk Animals, and happy Thanksgiving and happy Thanks Vegan to you.
Happy Thanks Vegan to you, too. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Loray and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, as we mentioned earlier, we'll be offering a pair of tickets to see Billy Gibbons this Sunday, November 29th at the Mahaffey Theater. Right now, it's time for some animal news and announcements, including the biggest one. It's last week. I was out of town last week. We heard me Memorex last Wednesday, as you probably know. But anyways, the National Institutes of Health announced that it would end its support for invasive research on chimpanzees and retire the 50 chimps that it had set aside for future biomedical research. That decision was announced early last week, as I say, brings to a close years of controversy about federally funded primate experimentation and follows a 2013 decision by the NIH to retire all but 50 of its chimpanzees to animal sanctuaries. So good news there. And also note from Gracie Grishup, our pal, our multi-hat wearing pal, and among other things, she is the leader of Sunset Bridge Band, and they are playing on the patio of the Dunedin House of Beer this Saturday, November 28th, and it's a dog-friendly outside in the patio event, and so it'll be lots of nice music and a nice way to hang out on holiday weekends. So you can find out more by going to sunsetbridgeband.com, and so that'll be a nice, that's again from 8 to 11 p.m. this Saturday, the 28th, and I think that's probably all we're going to have time for, so we'll be sure to get to our Name That Animal Tune segment. I am Douglas Rush. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days, and only, of course, if you can go to see Billy Gibbons this Sunday, the 29th, at the Mahaffey Theater. So that's our prize, a pair of tickets to see that show. For the first person who calls and correctly identifies this animal tune at 813-239-9663. A clue, though, this selection is tied to Old Blue Eyes is Back, WMNF's tribute to Frank Sinatra's 100th birthday happening December 12th at Skipper's Smokehouse. This may wind up being the El Supremo of WMNF tribute shows, produced by the Fabulous Plea, which guarantees a good show and a good time is had by all. So visit WMNF.org for tickets and more information. Meanwhile, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
That certain night, the night we met, there was magic abroad in the air.
All right, we'll take that guess off the air, and if you don't know the song, and maybe we'll even take who's singing it, whatever, but we want to make sure someone gets those tickets to the Billy Gibbons show. So right now, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF. Tampa by Rob Loray is up next. I'll be back next Wednesday, December 2nd, when my guest will be Laurie Anderson, the long-celebrated artist and musician who recently made an acclaimed film, Heart of a Dog, a meditation on the loss of her beloved dog, Lolabelle, the loss of her beloved husband, Lou Reed, and other themes. I hope you'll join me for that right here on Talking Animals next Wednesday, December 2nd, on WMNF. I'm Douglas Rush. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Happy Thanksgiving, and happy Thanksgiving, for that matter. It's WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Watch, and beyond.